The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com.
Welcome, welcome. It's another edition of Cool Stuff Ride Home. Marcus Papp and Reggie Rizzou with you. On today's episode, is a universal snake anti-venom on the horizon? Scientists are making significant progress. We'll tell you about it. New moons have been discovered. And on this day in history, the witch hunt begins in Salem. Coming up on Cool Stuff. Could a universal snake antivenom be on the horizon? Well, based on a new study published in the peer-reviewed journal Science Translational Medicine, it sure sounds like a real possibility. Per the study, the diversity of toxins present in snake venom for various species has always presented a huge challenge to the development of a universal antivenom. Put more plainly, there are a lot of different snakes with a lot of different venoms, making it hard for a single antivenom to protect against all of them. So in this case, scientists worked to develop an antibody that neutralizes a wide array of neurotoxins present in what they dubbed medically relevant snakes, a group that includes king cobras, crates, and black mambas. Their results were promising, as the antibody they landed on, sourced from a synthetic human antibody library with billions of entries, meaning the antibodies, by the way, were created in a lab setting, provided protection against snake envenoming in mice. And in case you're unfamiliar with the term envenoming, it's just a fancy word for the severe symptoms caused by a snake bite. The fact this antibody was sourced from humans, unlike current antivenoms sourced from animals, is also a potentially huge benefit, as it will likely result in fewer adverse side effects. So, how big of a problem are snake bites currently? Well, according to the study, they're estimated to cause between 81,000 and 138,000 deaths annually, a worldwide statistic, with an additional 400,000 or more people left with permanent disabilities.
That number is way higher than I would have expected. That is a pretty significant number of deaths annually. I know that's worldwide, but still, that's a lot of deaths just from snake bites.
Yeah, I would have never guessed that either. Now, the problem is more pronounced in lower income nations with limited access to medical resources, which includes those in the sub-Saharan region of Africa, where there are obviously a lot of poisonous snakes. Dr. Joseph Jardine is an assistant professor of immunology and microbiology at Scripps Research, the institute behind this study. As co-author, he issued a written statement that said, quote, "This antibody works against one of the major toxins found across numerous snake species that contribute to tens of thousands of deaths every year. This could be incredibly valuable for people in low and middle income countries that have the largest burden of deaths and injuries from snake bites," end quote. So let's dig a bit deeper here with regards to what the scientist actually did. Per the press release from Scripps, Jardine and his colleagues previously studied how broadly neutralizing antibodies against HIV can work by targeting areas of the virus that cannot mutate. After COVID, I think we're all painfully aware of a virus's ability to mutate and thereby change the rules of the game. They realized the challenge of finding a universal antivenom was similar to their quest for an HIV vaccine. Just like quickly evolving HIV proteins show small differences between each other, different snake venoms have enough variations that an antibody binding to one generally does not bind to others. But like HIV, snake toxins also have regions that cannot mutate, and an antibody targeting those areas could possibly work against all variants of that toxin. With that in mind, the scientists discovered that a type of protein called three-finger toxins present in all elapid snakes, that's the family of snakes with fangs, including cobras and mambas, contain small sections that look similar across different species. These proteins are considered highly toxic and are responsible for whole-body paralysis, making them an ideal therapeutic target. So with that in mind, the researchers set out to find an antibody that blocks three-finger toxins. They started by placing the genes for 16 different three-finger toxins into mammalian cells, which then produced the toxins in a lab. They then turned to the aforementioned library of more than 50 billion different human antibodies and tested which ones bound to the toxic proteins from the many-banded crate, also known as the Chinese crate or Taiwanese crate, which had the most similarities with other three-finger toxin proteins. That narrowed their search down to about 3,800 antibodies. They then tested those antibodies to see which of them also recognized four other three-finger toxin variants. Among the 30 antibodies identified in that screen, one stood out as having the strongest interaction across all the toxin variants, an antibody called 95MAT5. When the researchers studied exactly how 95MAT5 was so effective at blocking the three-finger toxin variants, they discovered the antibody mimicked the structure of the human protein that three-finger toxins often bind to. Interestingly, the broad-acting HIV antibodies that Jardine had previously studied also work by mimicking a human protein. Said Jardine, quote, "It's incredible that for two completely different problems, the human immune system has converged on a very similar solution. It also was exciting to see that we could make an effective antibody entirely synthetically. We did not immunize any animals, nor did we use any snakes," end quote. So all of this sounds pretty darn promising, right? That begs the question, what's next? Per the Scripps team, the 95MAT5 is effective against all elapid venom, but it does not block the venom of vipers, the second group of venomous snakes. So the team is now pursuing broadly neutralizing antibodies against another elapid toxin, as well as two viper toxins. They suspect that by combining 95MAT5 with these other antibodies, could provide broad coverage against many or all snake venoms. Per Irene Kalik, Scripps researcher and first author of the study, quote, "We think that a cocktail of these four antibodies could potentially work as a universal antivenom against any medically relevant snake in the world," end quote. A side note, earlier you heard me mention that current antivenoms are derived from animals. For background, they're made by immunizing donor animals such as horses or sheep with snake venoms. Think exposure therapy here. These animals have robust immune systems and produce powerful antibodies that can bind to snake venom components, which in turn enables our own human immune defenses to eliminate toxins, that per the World Health Organization. So, Reggie, like you said earlier, I don't know that I, like you, really realized how big of a problem this is, but sounds like a huge step forward in that regard. And if they can come up with something to also stop the viper bite, we may be able to save a lot of lives here.
I like the approach that they're going for there, is trying to target that one little thing at the with the venom and eliminate that. Instead of just trying to figure out what the venom problem is, if they're all similar, you just target that one and then you can eliminate it that way. It's an interesting process and something I had not thought of, but it clearly makes sense and it's a good approach. All I know is though they talk about a cocktail for four antibodies, it's not a cocktail I want to have. I'll take a different kind.
Well, only if you need it. How about that?
I mean, you know what? If I need it, that is a cocktail I want. You're right.
And then you could have a traditional cocktail once you're saved. So, you know, the one thing that jumped out at me, and this goes to show just how naive I am to this world, 50 billion with a B, different antibodies, human antibodies that the scientist had to run through here to ultimately land on one. I had no idea there were that many unique antibodies out there to even be tested. So then to go through the processes that these folks did to whittle it down and find that one, 95MAT5, and recognize that's the most effective against elapid toxins, I just mean, wow, that's pretty darn incredible. So we'll follow this story and see where it goes next and find out if they are, in fact, able to develop a antivenom for viper bites as well.
And you know what? I'm pretty sure with those 50 billion antibodies out there, you could just go to any school in the world and you'd probably get at least half of them from one kid.
Rim shot!
My kids are constantly sick.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
New celestial bodies have been found in our solar system. Now, nothing as fantastic as a new planet, even though I would like to see that, that Planet X or whatever that supposedly is going to destroy Earth at some point. Isn't there a theory about that? Anyways, it's nothing like that. Instead, we discovered three new moons around Neptune and Uranus. That means Neptune has upped their moon count to 16 and Uranus now has 28. The small moons were found using land-based telescopes in Hawaii and Chile. For one of the moons around Neptune, it has a 27-year journey around the planet, which is the longest known orbital journey known so far, and it's the faintest moon ever found. So it was one of the hardest because it's so hard to see because the lighting. So a few records being broken there. As for the new moon around Uranus, its diameter is only 5 miles. It's probably the smallest moon orbiting the planet and takes 680 Earth days to complete its orbit. Scott Shepard, an astronomer at the Carnegie Institution for Science in Washington, who is also involved in this discovery, said, quote, "We looked about 4 times deeper than anyone has before. These moons are on the edge of our ability. They are just faint, faint points of light," end quote. So what are their names? Once again, they're no fun in my opinion, at least for now. The new moon for Uranus is S-2023U1 because it was discovered in 2023. However, they said it'll be renamed after a character in a Shakespeare play, so at least they're going to come up with a better name for it. The moon that has that 27-year trip around Neptune, that one is S-2021N1, but that one will get a name from Greek mythology.
That sounds like a virus that nobody wants to get.
No, I do not want that virus, no. The other moon traveling around Neptune is currently called S2-2002N5 and was actually first seen over 20 years ago, but they lost it before they could actually confirm anything about it until now when they just recently found it again.
Was it discovered in 2002 by chance?
It was discovered in 2002 originally, yes.
These naming conventions, my God, they're tough to interpret.
I don't get the S2 part of it, but sure, whatever. Shepard said, quote, "You can lose a moon really easily. We basically needed really, really good weather. We need the telescope to be working perfectly, and we need everything to go right to detect these moons," end quote. The three moons do have similar paths as other satellites around the prospective planets, which leads astronomers to believe that they formed together when a larger moon broke up early in our solar system. Shepard said, "Until now, it was unclear whether Uranus and Neptune had these groups of outer moons like Jupiter and Saturn do. We believe these are fragments of once bigger moons, and there are probably many more smaller ones to find," end quote. However, according to Shepard, with our current technology, we are limited on what we can find, and it may be years, many years, before any more of these small moons will be found.
Well, I'm blown away. I had no idea there are 16 moons orbiting Neptune and 28 around Uranus right now. That is a much higher count than I would have ever guessed. Clearly, I have a lot to learn about space.
Yeah, once you get to those outer planets, I feel like there's a lot of them. Because obviously, Earth, we have our one, in case you didn't know. Mars has two, but one of them is more like an asteroid shape. It seems like once you get further out, you get more of those moons. But yeah, it's fascinating. And I like the fact that you get things like a 5 mile wide moon. I mean, that's not very big.
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting to see.
Buy real estate there now because it's scarce. And in, I don't know, 2000 years, that's going to be a coveted spot. So Set your family up for success now by purchasing land on the new 5 mile diameter moon circling Uranus.
Grabbing land on these may not be a bad idea. Maybe not grabbing land, but trying to purchase the moons because they're essentially asteroids in some ways. Who knows what minerals would be found in these in the next several thousand years? It could leave through a windfall for your family that it could be some rare material found. You never know.
Well, one, who would you buy it from? Because there's no
me
governing body.
I'll sell you the moon.
Are you gonna claim rights to it? Yep. And just start selling off portions? Yeah, fair enough. What I do wonder is if you just go out there and start mining different celestial bodies, what sort of effect that has on, I don't know, gravitational pull and different variables that kind of lead to our universe and solar system behaving the way that it does.
We mine on Earth. It's fine. It's fine.
Yeah, that's a problem for another generation, 28 generations down the line.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
I don't know if you want to consider this cool stuff, but on February 29th, 1692, that marks the first time people were accused of witchcraft in Salem, Massachusetts. Sarah Good, Sarah Osborne, and Tituba, a West Indian slave, were the first to be accused of witchcraft. The Salem trials ended up seeing around 200 people accused of witchcraft. 19 of those 200 were found guilty and executed. Another man was crushed to death for refusing to plead, while five others died in jail. So what started it all? It was when a group of young girls claimed to have been possessed by the devil, and then they accused women of being witches. Hysteria spread throughout colonial Massachusetts, and a special court was convened to hear trials of those accused. However, it didn't last long. By September, public opinion turned against the trials, and they eventually closed in early of 1693. A few other dates of interest for the trials. On April 22nd of 1692, Edward Bishop was jailed for proposing flogging as a cure for witchcraft in Salem. So they weren't a fan of his flogging mentality, I guess.
So you just jailed him for that? I mean, yeah. Dumb idea. The whole thing is absurd, but you put him in jail for that?
I've proposed a lot of dumb things. I'm glad I haven't been put in jail for them. The first victim of the Salem witch trials, Bridget Bishop, is hanged for witchcraft on June 10th of 1692. Five more people were hanged on July 19th of 1692. Five more people again were hanged on August 19th of 1692. The last people to get hung for witchcraft in the U.S., 19 overall, like I said, those happened on September 22nd of 1692. In 1711, the convictions of 22 people were reversed by courts, and their families were given monetary compensation. And then we jump 300 years into the future. On May 9th, 1992, Salem Village Witchcraft Victims Memorial is dedicated in Danvers, formerly known as Salem Village, to mark the 300-year anniversary of the trials.
What a time in history to look back on how crazy this was. And quite honestly, I hate to say it, but it's indicative of a lot of things we still see today. Mass hysteria over things, frightening rumors that are started and people jump aboard. It's very much in my mind, like a lot of conspiracy theories we hear about today, where someone throws something against the wall and inevitably they find a group of people that are willing to listen. And it sticks, at least with a segment of folks. And in this case, you know, you talk about the Salem witch trials, it's all based on fear. And I think that's probably true for a lot of things that still take place today. So a cautionary tale to think critically and investigate and don't let fear rule everything and totally dismantle your logic.
Yeah, I second that. I mean, these seem barbaric, like this would never happen. But clearly, you just look at it from a different point of view where we may not be putting people on trial and killing them at the moment, but that same fear, that same thought process is still in the human brain. And we have a lot of these examples nowadays, I think.
Yeah. What is crazy to me is, okay, it's what, like a little over a year later that they dissolve the court for witchcraft. I mean, that would be on my conscience the rest of my life if I was someone involved with wrongly convicting some of these young women who were then put to death for nothing.
Think about how it all started. It was probably, as I said, a couple of young girls claimed to be possessed by the devil and then accused other women of being witches. They probably just didn't like the other girls,
right,
and wanted to get them in trouble in some way, thought, hey, let's do this. And then all of a sudden it snowballed to lots of people dying. How would you feel to be those original girls accusing others of being witches and creating this hysteria?
Yeah, it's a wild, wild story. Crazy time in history.
That'll do it for another edition of Cool Stuff Ride Home. You can reach us at coolstuffcommute@gmail.com. You can also, if you want, leave a review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. We would appreciate it.
Hopefully you want.
Yes, that would be nice. I'm Reggie Rizzou. He's Marcus Path. We'll be back with more cool stuff tomorrow.